So, Sam, if I could ask you to hit the record button.
I did, Judge.
Right, thank you, sir. Again, good morning, everybody. We, as you just noted, we are recording this conference. However, as we all know, a status conference can take on a lot of different levels of formality. While we're handling this virtually, I would encourage you to consider it as the equivalent of an in-person status conference that we'd hold in a large conference room rather than a courtroom. We have a number of things to talk through today, but any orders or other actions that are necessary to effectuate anything that we discuss, we'll deal with on paper after this conference. That said, let me identify something up front that I'm going to return to at the end of our conference. We recognize that given the number of cases that we have here, the number of attorneys that are involved, there's a heightened level of interest in everything that we're doing. So recognizing that, we've tossed around the idea of whether it would be useful to post the recording of this conference on the court's website, as we do with many oral arguments these days. Think about that, and I'll return to that issue at the end of our discussion to get a sense of what your views are on that question. First things first, I mean, let me thank you all for the cooperation that you've shown to date. These 301 cases, they represent an unusually large number of cases, and they would present special challenges to the court and to all of us under normal circumstances. Of course, we're not operating under normal circumstances these days with the ongoing pandemic and the continuing need for most of us to be working from home. Hopefully, we're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel as far as the pandemic's concerned, and we're going to be transitioning back to our offices, both at the court and for you all. While that might make our collective work together easier, we know when Murphy's Law is going to rear its ugly head, as it inevitably does, we're just going to make adjustments as necessary. We're going to need everyone's continuing cooperation to achieve justice and resolve these cases in as speedy and inexpensive a manner as possible. That doesn't mean we don't expect you to zealously represent your client, making your own best case to the court. Just continue to recognize that the other side is entitled to do the same. For our part, we're going to continue to do the best that we can to keep the cases on track, using the most appropriate case management tools at our disposal for that purpose. Let me start out with some housekeeping matters. I've got several of them that I want to cover up front. Let me start with the stay. In Procedural Order 2104, we stayed the 301 cases that were assigned to the panel, other than the HMTX case, which will proceed as the sample case. I've been monitoring the ongoing trickle of additional 301 cases. And while we had been assigning these additional cases to the panel, I do worry about the possibility, at least, of some future case creating a conflict that could require one or more of us to have to recuse. So, to avoid that possibility, what I'm inclined to do is to issue an administrative order for the court, wearing my other hat as chief judge, that would automatically stay any of the new 301 cases without assignment. If parties want to lift that stay for any reason, they will follow the procedures comparable to those laid out in Procedural Order 2104, including conferring with the steering committee and the government in advance of filing the motion. As with the 301 cases that are assigned to the panel, we would evaluate next steps after the resolution of the sample case that we have here. Let me address in advance one possible concern. I definitely want to stress the word if, after briefing and full consideration, the three-judge panel does issue a preliminary injunction in the assigned 301 cases, what I would consider doing then is issuing a follow-on administrative order that would extend the preliminary injunction to those unassigned cases, absent an objection from defendants within X number of days, and we can talk about what X should be. Again, I don't want to get ahead of things, but at the same time, I want you all to understand that we continue to give consideration to how to keep those cases on a reasonably equal footing without assignment to a judge or judges. Let me pause there and just ask if any of you all have thoughts, questions, or concerns about this this approach. Mr. Nicely? Yeah.
Good morning, Judge Burnett. Good morning, Your Honors. Morning. Matt Nicely here for HMTX and on behalf of the steering committee more widely. I guess the only thing, and you may have noticed in the motion that we filed last week, this issue about the possibility of some plaintiffs seeking to opt out of the PI, if indeed you decide to grant one. So that's another added complication that we may want to think about. But other than that, it strikes me that your idea should work. We just would need to figure out how to handle that situation. That's all.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Shookman or anyone for the government?
Apologies, Your Honor. I was muted for a second. I think that sounds like a reasonable path forward for the government, and we don't have any objections at this time.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Great. Next housekeeping matter, the administrative record. I noticed in the proposed briefing schedule we the court generally adopted, you all provided a date for submitting the index to the administrative record, but you didn't otherwise address submitting record documents. Unlike Rule 56.2, Rule 56.1 doesn't address appendices and such. Based on my review of the complaint, I mean, I understand this is not going to be a record intensive case, but so to that end, let me ask that if you're going to cite any record documents in your brief, just provide an appendix to the brief containing copies of any of the record documents cited. Does that seem like it'll work for everybody? Any nods of the head will be sufficient?
And,
yes. Okay. All right. Okay. Any problems? If flag it. Okay. Next issue. Amended complaints, and this is one that I think we'll have to do a little follow-up paperwork on afterwards, depending on how the conversation goes here. On the amended complaints, we actually got two issues there. First, there were a number of amended complaints that were filed more than 21 days after the original complaint, but before the master answer was filed. And many of those were filed either without the defendant's consent or leave of the court. Post assignment, if those happened, we tried to catch those filings, and in each case, they were refiled with the defendant's consent. For the record, because we're recording, and we'll make a docket notation, I think, after the fact, then in the master file. For the record, let me ask whether the defendant consents to any of those prior amended complaints that sort of fall in this gap time period. And if you need some time to go back and confirm, that's fine. Just let me know. But to the extent that they were coming in and they didn't cause any issues, and we didn't think about the little rule issue, I want to check that box and clear that up now. Ms. Shookman?
Yes, Your Honor. We have generally been consenting to all of the amended complaints. I think we would want to review the specific amended complaints, but assuming that they look like the other ones that we've seen, I think we would generally be okay consenting to those.
Okay. I mean, I just so that you know, I mean, I don't I don't have a specific list of ones that fall into this category. I know that there were some number of them. In fact, I think there was some confusion within the bar about the fact that they, if they had waited more than 21 days to file the amended complaint, they didn't think about the fact that they either needed to do so with a motion or after seeking defendant's consent. So, they just did it. And again, most of those happen, or many of them happen pre-assignment. I think after they were assigned to the three-judge panel, we, at least as far as I know, we caught most of those, and clarified for plaintiff's counsel that they did need to go back and either file a motion or seek your consent. So those are the one that's what I'm talking about. I don't know how many fall into that category, but let me ask that then that you take you tell me how much time you want. Just so we have a sense of sort of when to expect to hear from you on that.
Just to clarify, Your Honor, will there be a specific list of cases with this issue, or are you looking for our consent just generally to complaints that were filed in this gap period that you've specified?
Well, I'm not sure that it's an either or, that your question was really an either or question. to the second part of it, the answer is definitely yes. I mean, I think assume if you in fact consent to all of them, that there's no issue there, then a blanket consent or, a single letter filed in the master case would certainly be adequate. Let me ask Jeff Gould, is that something, that kind of a list, something that we can easily help out in terms of pulling together, or is that going to be a bit of an issue?
Your Honor, I can certainly research that and see if there are any outstanding.
There wouldn't be anything out. That's the thing, is there wouldn't be anything outstanding. What happened was, so plaintiffs were simply filing an amended complaint and they were labeling it as an amended complaint. But again, it was after 21 days and most of these are before assignment.
I can certainly look into it. And if there are any there, I can provide a list.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Ms. Schuchman, we'll do what we can. We'll see if we can help you out on exactly the ones we're talking about. I mean, we noted that they happened and we didn't go back. Because, I mean, there was a decent passage of time between when the complaints started to get filed and when they were assigned that I don't know that we, we didn't identify a specific list, but we know it was happening. So we'll see what we can do to help you out on that one. But if we can try to maybe, clear that, check this box off in the next couple of weeks, that would probably be good. Again, just for the good of the order. The second one is easier. The second issue with amended complaints is actually easier. And that is after the filing of the master answer, within the next 21 days, we noted there were some amended complaints that came in that the way they were filed in the CMECF system, they triggered the creation of a deadline for another answer from the government. To the court's knowledge, none of those amended complaints expanded the universe of claims that were being made in the 301 cases. So to that end, let me ask Mr. Nicely if plaintiffs have any objection to the court simply treating the master answer as the relevant answer for purposes of the amended complaints.
At the moment, Your Honor, I have no reason to think that we would have any objection. But just based upon your indication that there's no change, substantive change, but we of course have not had a chance to look at all of those. But again, I don't know that it's really necessary if you're indicating there's not much change.
All right. Well, let me give you the opportunity to do that then, and maybe and again, because we're recording this, but we're not sort of formally on the record. We're not doing rulings through this conference. Let me ask you in the next week or two to put a letter in the master case file and just confirm that for us as well. That'd be great.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you. Next housekeeping matter is from our side is public access. You know, I had hoped that we could allow members of the public, non-steering committee members, et cetera, to listen in on the status conference if they wished, if you all were comfortable with that. But we were not able to address the technology challenges that we had in time to do this, to actively consider it. There's an absolute cap on the number of connections that can come in for at least the version of WebEx that the court has access to, and that includes dial-in connections. And we didn't want to run a risk of hitting that cap or creating bandwidth problems that might interfere with the conference. As I mentioned at the beginning, we're recording it and we're going to try to deal with it for this, with that question of potentially posting the recording on the website. And that's a works as a short-term solution, but it's certainly less than ideal in terms of going forward. For the longer term, and this is just mainly FYI, really, what we're hoping to do is to switch to more of a two-track system comparable to what a number of other courts are using, where in the WebEx connection, that'll be reserved for participants who expect to speak. And then the audio from that main conference would be live streamed via YouTube or some other solution. I think the AO, the courts generally have a solution using YouTube, and we're looking at connecting into that. As I say, nothing for anybody to do at the moment. I just wanted you all to know so that, you know, if you're getting questions from your colleagues about what happened during the conference, not only can you let them know, but let them know that hopefully in the future they'll be able to listen in real time. Next issue on my list was with respect to filings. I know there was a little bit of confusion last week in connection with the filing of the preliminary injunction motion. Let me remind you all, I mean, if the filing is limited to a specific case, as we had, for example, with the amended complaints that we were talking about earlier, after the master answer was filed, I mean, something like that, those filings are properly filed with the caption for the specific case in the docket for that specific case and nowhere else. Even though there's only one case that was proposed and selected as the sample case to go forward, that case, HMTX, is proceeding first as the representative case for the 301 cases. So filings with respect to HMTX as the sample case to reflect, you know, for potential application to all the 301 cases should be made in the master case file, court number 2152, with that master case caption. We're doing this in order to, again, streamline filings, minimize the burden on everyone. And to that end, I mean, to the extent that it wasn't clear to everyone, it was a reason that we asked the plaintiffs to withdraw that parallel filing then in HMTX, because, you know, we know how attorneys are. We figured everybody would start to worry that they needed to have belts and suspenders. And if it stayed there, we were going to start to see PI motions filed in all of the thousands of 301 cases. And we didn't want that to happen. So a little clarity there. Is there any question about that issue, just while we're all gathered together, just so we can be clear? Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. And then one last housekeeping thing with respect to motions practice. And it sort of goes back to, in some respects, to what I started off with in terms of appreciating your cooperation. I mean, we do want you to all continue to work together cooperatively to try to resolve issues among yourselves without engaging in unnecessary motion practice as much as possible. First, you know, when you need to file a motion with the court, consult with the other side, file your motion. We will rule on the motions that are properly before us and do our best to keep things moving using reasonable case management techniques. But one thing I would say there is don't expect us to respond to requests that are made in footnotes, for example, that really should be made by separate motion. So to that extent, for example, in footnote one of the preliminary injunction motion, there's a request about leave to file a reply brief. You know, that's not under consideration by the court. I mean, that needs to be done by separate motion. With that, let me stop again and ask if there's any other, you know, comparable housekeeping type motions that housekeeping issues, rather, sorry, that anyone wants to comment on, has a question about, et cetera. Ms. Shookman, I wasn't sure if you were making sure you were muted or making sure you were unmuted to raise a question.
I just wanted to say there's nothing further from the government.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Nicely?
Your Honor, I don't think we have any questions. There may be issues about the applicability, this opt-out issue that I talked about earlier.
Right.
I appreciate your clarifying that, at least with regard to the motion that we filed last week, that indeed, let me just pose the question. We're assuming that what we filed and the way we filed it, notwithstanding your point about footnote one, is in order, such that it will indeed, if you were to grant the motion, would cover all of the plaintiffs involved in the master case.
Again, I'm not going to prejudge any of it. I mean, obviously the defendants will have an opportunity to respond in full, and whether they may raise some issues that we're not yet thinking about, I don't want to, again, sort of prejudge the outcome. I mean, there may be some comment that they would have with respect to limiting the scope or something like that. But I, you know, off the top of my head, it's there under consideration. I think we certainly fully understand what your intention was.
Okay.
With respect to the motion.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything else? So let's turn then to relief for a couple of minutes here. I mean, last week, I mean, as we know, the plaintiffs filed their motion for a preliminary injunction, and you know, we'll rule on it after briefing. So, you know, this is a status conference. I don't want to turn it into an impromptu oral argument on the motion before defendants have an opportunity to respond. But I think it's nevertheless helpful, useful for you all to keep in mind that the court is looking, and we're going to continue to look at this issue through a dual lens, if you will, of both ruling on whatever motion happens to be filed, trying to do so consistent with the special case management needs of the fact that we've got, you know, somewhere in the range of 3,600 cases pending before us. So what does that mean? I mean, it means that, you know, we're only going to issue a preliminary injunction if it's warranted consistent with the law. Nothing at all surprising there, shouldn't be. And the fact that we're focusing this attention on it should in no way be interpreted as the court having predetermined anything with respect to the outcome. I mean, again, defendants are going to have their opportunity to file opposition to the preliminary injunction motion in due course. We'll wait and look at that, and we'll consider the merits, just like in any other case. But with regard to that second lens, we keep in mind, and you all should too, that this isn't just any other case. I mean, that second lens we think about as, or I think about it at least, as a reality check. And that is, if the court, and I stress again, if the court disagrees with the defendants and determines to issue a preliminary injunction, for example, we'd like to know, I mean, is there any special language that we should be thinking about including in the preliminary injunction in order to facilitate CBP's administration of the preliminary injunction without diminishing its effect in any way? Again, I don't want to diminish the government's ability to file an opposition to the preliminary injunction or otherwise defend itself on the merits, because again, we're far from having any views on those merits. But the court wants to, we need to be proactive in exercising our case management prerogatives to consider and to the extent possible address issues up front that may facilitate resolution of these cases on the back end. Again, without intending in any way to diminish the rights of any party. We see this all too often, or we have seen it, you know, in the customs area, for example, where a plaintiff wins relief in their test case, but nevertheless, it can take years to work through the issues in a suspension disposition calendar, largely because the challenges associated with the passage of time. To the extent that we can use our case management tools up front to minimize that risk, again, without impacting the substantive rights of either party, we're going to be actively engaged in that process. All right. So that's, I hope that gives both sides a better sense of sort of where we are, what the kinds of things that we're thinking about at this point in the process. And with that, let me again just stop and ask if either side wants to say anything, maybe not with respect to the merits of the preliminary injunction question, but to this bigger or equally large process issue that I've identified. Okay, Mr. Nicely's shaking his head no. Ms. Shookman?
Your Honor, we have nothing specific to add at this time, but we will certainly be addressing the difficulties that would be involved for our client, CBP, in administering the injunction that plaintiff has requested. So these issues are certainly forefront on our minds, and we will take due consideration of the instructions that you just gave as we go forward.
Okay. I mean, let just to maybe put a slightly finer point on it in because I think we recognize that. And I think the one thing that we want to continue to encourage you to think about, though, is notwithstanding the fact that, okay, fine, their language as drafted may cause you difficulties in administration, the question then would be, but if they otherwise have established or do establish their entitlement to a preliminary injunction, is there alternative language, additional language, some different, you know, different language in one way or another that can, that will accommodate your concerns about administration while, again, not diminishing their right to, if again, if established, a preliminary injunction to confirm the availability of relief, again, all if justified. So that's the point that we're trying to get across, that this isn't, you know, don't think about this as this is just HMTX versus the government, it's one case, and so we're just going to say, well, that you know, fight it, that it's too much of a problem. Because at the end of the day, if the court disagrees with you, okay, we issue standard preliminary injunction language. Well, I mean, is there something we can do with that language if we get to that point that would facilitate the administration of the injunction for the government? That's what we would like to hear in the alternative. And if the alternative is no, there's nothing you can do to make this work better, you know, it's going to be a problem no matter what. Okay, then say that as well. I mean, I think that, but that is a, think about that as a separate question to address in your response to the motion. That's what I would encourage. All right. That covers what I had on my plate for today. Let me first ask my colleagues who are on here as well, Judge Kelly or Judge Joe Groves, anything that you want to add?
Nothing to add. No, thank you.
Thanks.
I just wanted to ask when the government is planning to respond to the preliminary injunction motion.
Good morning, Your Honor. The government proposes the date that we included in the joint status report. So that would be 3 weeks from the filing of plaintiff's motion, which would be, I believe, May 13th, if you go by the date of the motion filed in the HMTX case, or May 14th, if you go by the date of the refiled motion in the master case.
Thank you. All right, let me, parties, do either of the parties have anything else they want to address at this point?
Your Honor, Matt Nicely, I don't think we have anything else. We appreciate the court's hard work on this case. Obviously, there's a lot of time has passed since we originally filed, so we urge, notwithstanding the fact that it is a huge case, an unprecedentedly large case, that there is an interest on the part of the plaintiffs to move as expeditiously as possible. But and we appreciate all the hard work that takes on the court and the court staff to make that happen. But other than that, no, we have nothing else.
Okay. Ms. Shookman?
Your Honor, Mr. Shah, Pratik Shah.
Oh, sorry. We'll come back to you, Ms. Shookman. Don't worry. Yep.
I did want to add one question on the timing about the motion for leave to reply. Would the court prefer that we had proposed a separate schedule in the JSR to have a more expedited response and reply on the preliminary injunction motion, just given the ongoing liquidation? Would the court, if the court is inclined to allow the government the full 3 weeks to respond, would you like us to wait until they file the response to file our motion for leave for reply, or would you like us just to file that up front so you can set forth a schedule that includes everything?
Well, you can file it whenever you think you're ready to file it. I mean, obviously, keeping in mind that, you know, the challenge in a situation like that is you've got to justify the need for a reply, since we're talking about a non-dispositive motion, and it may be a little more difficult to justify prior to the government's response. So I'll leave that, you interpret those words as you wish, and I'll leave that to your discretion. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Shookman.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's nothing further that the government would like to address.
Okay, thank you. Then last thing, as I promised at the outset, is that I would turn back to that question if you all have any views one way or the other on posting the recording of the conference. Let me start with Mr. Nicely for the plaintiffs.
From my perspective, by all means, we should do that for all the reasons you mentioned earlier about how we weren't able to stream it today. There are many, many plaintiffs. They all wish they could join. and so I would definitely say, and there's no reason not to be transparent here, I would say that it should be posted.
Okay. Ms. Shookman, any concerns or?
I don't anticipate any concerns, Your Honor, but if I could just confer with my colleagues after this conference, and I will follow up with the court shortly on this question.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. If you want to do that simply by email through Mr. Goal, copying, obviously, plaintiff's counsel, that'd be great. Just something informal is sufficient for those purposes. Okay. Well, thank you all for doing this. You know, this may be a little different than most cases. I'm sure it's going to be different than most cases. It may be necessary, appropriate as we go along. I mean, if the need arises, we're certainly willing to do, you know, occasional sort of informal check-ins if it'll facilitate things moving forward. But in the meantime, we'll get out of your hair and let you get to the work of the cases, and appreciate your joining us today. Beautiful day outside. Stay healthy. And maybe next time we'll be able to do something like this, at least partially in person. So, all right. Thank you all.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.